The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We start this week in the uppermost part of Abya Yala, a place referred to colonially as Ontario, where activists and harm reduction advocates are working to restore funding and reopen overdose prevention sites. There's a news briefing March 5th. Here's Nick Boyce, senior policy analyst with the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition.
The overdose or toxic drug crisis has been building across the country for a decade. We lost over 40,000 people in Canada in the last 8 years. In Ontario, 7 to 10 people are killed every day by toxic unregulated drugs. As demonstrated recently in Belleville, there are also massive strains on emergency services and hospitals. Unfortunately, the federal government has not been bold enough in its actions, while some provincial governments have not supported the initiatives and policy changes needed to end the crisis. Specifically, despite the proven effectiveness of supervised consumption sites, the Ontario government has delayed and impeded approval and funding of sites under their consumption and treatment services model. Some applications have been waiting for over 2 years. Yesterday, a coalition of 51 groups endorsed a letter to the Ontario government demanding 8 urgent actions. A link to that letter is in the chat. As demonstrated by the overwhelming interest in today's event, almost 500 people registered in just a few days, it is clear people across Ontario care deeply about this issue. Right now, there is an opportunity for all levels of government to urgently get on side and take action. The evidence is clear. Supervised consumption sites stop deaths, reduce costs and strains on the emergency services and hospitals, and increase connections to health and social supports, including treatment. The first sites in Ontario opened in fall 2017. In June 2018, the current provincial government was elected. Since then, the unregulated drug supply has become increasingly volatile. But instead of scaling up sites, the government added a layer of red tape to the application and reporting process, put an arbitrary cap of 21 sites across the entire province, and is currently only funding 17 sites, with only one in Northern Ontario, where they have some of the highest death rates in the country. Other sites have had to rely on temporary municipal funding and public donations, despite this being a provincial jurisdiction. Windsor recently closed. Without immediate provincial funding, Sudbury and Timmins will close by the end of March. People will continue to die and communities will needlessly suffer if the Ontario government does not take accountability and act right now. As noted in our letter, we have several demands. The first being to immediately provide direct emergency funding before March 29th to sites that have submitted their applications and are under imminent threat of closure or have closed due to lack of funding.
That was Nick Boyce with the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition speaking in a news briefing March 5th on an effort to resist the closure of safe consumption sites across Ontario. Now let's hear from Michael Parkinson, coordinator of the Drug Strategy Network of Ontario.
Thank you, Nick, and thank you to all of you who are joining us here today, especially those among us who have lost friends and family far too soon. To have hundreds of people and organizations join us on such short notice ought to reassure all of us that there is widespread support to suspend the inertia and partisanship that divides us from the relief we all seek. The Drug Strategy Network of Ontario is unique in North America, stretching across urban, rural, and remote Ontario. Members and their partners assist in local, collaborative, and multi-sectoral drug strategies and have experience and expertise in advancing initiatives in prevention, harm reduction, treatment, and enforcement justice systems. And lest we forget, the coroner's fatality data reminds all of us of the opportunities to act on behalf of the dead, to protect the living, whether people are recreational consumers or are self-managing withdrawal or pain via unregulated, untaxed, and toxic drug markets favored by successive governments since 1908. By any metric, Ontario's drug poisoning tragedy meets the definition of a raging public health emergency. In the absence of deploying an emergency response, thousands of preventable deaths and injuries will occur this year. It is not a question of whether communities are overwhelmed. We are, and not just recently. Several Ontario municipalities and band councils have declared states of emergencies. Many more others are in a near constant state of issuing overdose alerts. Supervised consumption services are among the immediate life-saving opportunities before us, grounded in evidence and desperately desired by many Ontario communities. The network supports their expansion. At their core, the service is about a small room with a table, a chair, and a pair of eyes able to respond to a life-threatening emergency. That's not the complicated part. The complicated part is the expensive, arbitrary, and onerous approval process mired in provincial red tape that obstructs, dissuades, and divides communities. Having worked inside a consumption service and witnessed a plethora of benefits, I can assure you a table, a chair, and a pair of eyes should not be so challenging to establish and maintain. That service was later closed, and within 3 months, three people I knew had passed away prematurely. The Drug Strategy Network of Ontario strongly encourages the province to immediately seize the opportunities to expedite existing CTS applications, provide operational funding for non-CTS consumption sites, to end the ban on accommodating inhalation, the leading modality suspected at the time of death, and to redesign the approvals process to one that helps, not hinders, public health and safety across Ontario. On behalf of the Drug Strategy Network of Ontario, we look forward to the kind of leadership that swiftly embraces solution-focused evidence and the wisdom of caring communities across the province. Thank you.
That was Michael Parkinson with the Drug Strategy Network of Ontario, speaking at a news briefing March 5th on efforts to resist the closure of safe consumption sites across Ontario. This is Michael Brennan, Executive Director of Positive Pathways in Windsor, Ontario.
Can I quickly would like to acknowledge everyone who gathered here today who continues to keep the dialogue moving forward on how we support our local and regional communities that we work with and for every day on this issue. And this is why I'm here today supporting this advocacy movement, is because of community, our community. The closure of our urgent public health needs site in Windsor, SafePoint, with the operating partners of Hotel Duke Grace Hospital and Windsor Essex County Health Unit, is at a critical moment in time in our community, as we are now entering our 17th month since our CTS application submission. This government has committed to multiple sites in the province of Ontario, and we have followed an intensive, astringent application process as a result of this commitment. Since the critical incident in Toronto, attempts from our community applicants to understand what else will be required, timelines, guidance, or direction have yet to be communicated. There has been a tremendous expectation of transparency and accountability on the community applicants and stakeholders' end, and we would just like to see this reciprocated. A comprehensive response to reducing harms associated with substance use requires as many tools in our toolbox that we can access, which would be inclusive of a CTS. Our CTS application has been in a 7-year journey of consensus and capacity building with a broad range of community stakeholders from multiple sectors, a regional 4-pillar substance strategy, mental health and addictions networks, health and social support teams, the business community, residents, and lived experience of people who use substances. Our doors opened in April of this year, and slowly and steadily, we began the process of building trust and meaningful engagement with a community that is often marginalized, stigmatized, and may sometimes require complex care and support. Just as we were about to gain traction in our community, we had still not heard from the government, outside of them having to put a review process in place. And we only had a finite amount of funding that was already generously put forward from our SafePoint partners that ended up impacting even their budgeting and programs. A tremendous amount of time and resources, both capital and human, have been invested at the community level for our SafePoint site. All of this also through the height of the pandemic. This commitment of time and resources was a requirement by the province to support wraparound care and to build pathways into our community. We will have to restart that process, and that may require restaffing, training, onboarding, reestablishing community network pathways to community supports, and most important, rebuilding that trust that we had started to establish with the service users. In other words, this massive local investment in time and resources and development of care pathways will be difficult to maintain without provincial investment. Our local climbing statistics of overdose increases, toxic substances in the community, resulting in increases in emergency room visits, EMT dispatch and enforcement calls continue to strain capacity in healthcare, and the social supports landscape is continuously challenged and changing beneath our feet in real time in our region. Finally, the province and our healthcare systems continue to send messages to the community level that there needs to be greater collaboration amongst service providers to work together to reduce barriers to access care, create pathways and continuums of care for treatment and support, improving patient navigation and improving the health outcomes, to name but a few. The CTS process has been a shining example of how our community service providers have stepped into the space to address harms related to substance use in our community. All we are asking for is some transparency on the provincial side and to support the tremendous investment that has already taken place. Collaboration must have action items or it merely becomes another buzzword. Thank you.
That was Michael Brennan with Positive Pathways in Windsor, Ontario, speaking at a news briefing March 5th on efforts to resist the closure of safe consumption sites across Ontario. Now here's Dr. Julie Sampson with Timmins and District Hospital.
I'm Dr. Julie Sampson, and I'm one of the co-leads of the Addiction Medicine Consult Service in Timmins and District Hospital. Timmins, a population of 42,000 in Northern Ontario. Our hospital is also the operator of our safe consumption and treatment site called Safe Health Site Timmins, for which I am the medical co-director. Our consumption site is an integral component of our regional public health and harm strategy and serves as an access point for treatment services. This site's been operational due to funding from the City of Timmins until December 2023, with a temporary extension until the end of March approved by the Board of Directors of our hospital in the hope of bridging services until provincial funding approval. The Board of Directors of our hospital, city councillors, and our community recognize the importance of this site as part of the continuum of care for our patients. Unfortunately, without provincial funding, our site will close March 31st, and it will be devastating. The risks associated with the closure of this site are significant and have the potential to negatively impact our entire community. There will be an increase in death. Our site has managed 361 overdoses since its opening. 36% required administration of naloxone, which could have resulted in fatalities otherwise if these clients were not using our site, with zero fatalities from overdoses at our site. We can expect an increase in emergency medical service calls. This will result in an increased response time to other non-drug related emergencies in our community. Our site has helped reduce calls to paramedics by almost 20% for drug related overdoses. We can expect an increase in presentations to our emergency department due to an increase in opiate related fatal and non-fatal overdoses and drug use complications. This will contribute to increase in wait times in an already overburdened emergency department. We've been providing basic medical care to close to 150 clients, helping divert these services from the emergency department since our opening. We've been giving out harm reduction supplies to over 1,500 individuals and distributed over 220 naloxone kits per month since its opening. We will no longer be able to provide these. Our site is also unique as it is operated by our hospital and works closely with our addiction team. This has led to 40 direct admissions to our withdrawal management and treatment unit located at our hospital, allowing immediate access to treatment services. Northern Ontario has been disproportionately affected by opiate poisoning fatalities, and we still do not have a provincially funded safe consumption site in our Northeastern Ontario region. This speaks to the inequalities and disparity of services within our province. In closing, we have a treatment center that has been proven to save lives and link people to healthcare services, social services, and addiction treatment. Why do we as a society continue to choose to ignore the evidence base and base our decision on public opinion? That continues to surprise me as a physician who's been trained to save lives and help people suffering from disease and illness, including addictions. Everyone's life is worth saving. We do not get to choose whose life we get to save. I ask the provincial government, why do you?
That was Dr. Julie Sampson with Timmins and District Hospital speaking at a news briefing March 5th on efforts to resist the closure of safe consumption sites across Ontario. Amber Fritz is manager of supervised consumption services at Rizzo Access Network in Sudbury, Ontario.
My name is Amber Fritz. I'm the manager of supervised consumption services with Rizzo Access Network in Sudbury. We submitted our application to the province on August the 27th, 2021, and we're still waiting. We have had very little communication as to what the status of our application is. Due to the disproportionate effect that this crisis is having on our region, we assumed that we would get funding. The city graciously stepped in and funded us until December the 31st, 2023. So that funding ended, and by the grace of people being generous enough to donate, we've been operating on donations since January 1st of this year. That allows us very little job security for folks. That allows us very little consistency for folks that access services. Numerous staff have resigned because of lack of job security, which we cannot offer people. And recently we had to reduce our services because of lack of staff. So we are now only open Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. And this was the first weekend that we weren't offering services over the weekend. And that was already felt by community. So what effect would us closing down completely have if the effect was felt over the span of 2 days without us offering services? We are the only supervised consumption site in the District of Sudbury, Manitoulin. There is nowhere else for us to refer people to should we close down. And when people say to us, well, where am I supposed to go? We say, we don't know, because we don't have another consumption site. What we will have, however, is unsupervised consumption sites, people that used to come here in a supervised, safe, helpful, compassionate environment will now be back on the street, in alleyways, in public washrooms. If you don't have supervised consumption sites, you're going to have unsupervised consumption sites. We all know that this crisis is getting worse. It is not getting better. We need services like supervised consumption sites more than ever to ensure that people who use drugs have the support that they need. There's a significant amount of inequity between the North and the South. Should Timmins and Sudbury shut down, there will be no supervised consumption services between Toronto and Thunder Bay. That's a pretty vast area, if you think about it. So people who use drugs deserve better. People in Sudbury deserve better. All we want to do is support our community and keep people alive. And we know that supervised consumption sites do this. So I'm grateful that everyone came together today, and thank you for people that have taken the time to join us. This is an issue that needs more attention and that needs to be brought to the forefront, because people are dying and people will continue to die if we don't have action on this issue.
That was Amber Fritz with Réseau Access Network in Sudbury, Ontario, speaking at a news briefing March 5th on efforts to resist the closure of safe consumption sites across Ontario. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We go now from Canada to Colorado, where a bill to allow municipalities to authorize the opening of overdose prevention centers, also known as safe consumption sites, is working its way through the legislature. House Bill 24-1028 was approved by the Colorado Legislature's House Committee on Health and Human Services on March 6th in a vote of 9-4. Let's hear some voices from that committee hearing. First, here's Representative Elizabeth Epps, one of the bill's co-sponsors.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to be back before you all, even in a differently composed, different composition of the committee. It's good to be back, but it's not good the reason why we're back. And I'm glad to have the opportunity to discuss with you 1028 and invite you to support it. So everyone who I've looked at so far voted in support of this bill 2 years ago, and it authorizes overdose prevention centers. Several operative words there, but the real one is authorizes. In Colorado, we are, I'm going to say this without crying, we are suffering as every corner of this country is, with losing our neighbors and our loved ones to preventable overdose deaths. Those deaths are overwhelmingly the result of policy choices. And while often what we can do in our role, this body, is limited, one thing we can do is correct choices and make better ones, ones that are based on evidence, science, ones that are driven by the health professionals who are living this work day in and day out. Today is the 6th, right? Thank you. And it's Black Balloon Day. If I were more together, I'd have had a little black balloon for each of you. It's a day that in the States, and now it's expanded beyond, but is set to recognize folks who have lost, or those we have lost to drug overdoses, and those still struggling to get well, to get free. It is rare, I think, I guess I'm biased, that a bill is as simple and clean, and I mean that down to the number of the words, the way they fit on the page, as this very simple authorization bill. I want you to know, and I'm not going to talk long at all, but I want you to know that in spring of 2023, this body courageously and correctly and aligned with science, I should say this chamber, passed an authorization for local control of overdose prevention centers. Some of us reconvened in the summer to be a part of the opioid interim group. I see a member of that group here. And we revisited overdose prevention centers, not the first time, not the second time that this legislature has done so. And in doing that, worked really hard on a version that was complicated, didn't work for stakeholders, wasn't what practitioners and families were asking for, but was something. And while it wasn't ideal, it was an attempt. That attempt ended without becoming legislation. And that puts us in a position where we're now back in the position to do this right. Every time you come to the Capitol, I feel like you all should be able to recite this line by now, but every time you come to the Capitol, you are coming to House District 6. And House District 6 in Denver is in the city and county where our city council years ago did approve a pilot site for an overdose prevention center contingent upon the state of Colorado giving that authorization. I don't have the exact number because it has changed even since yesterday of how many folks we've lost as we've waited for that authorization. No one here is deluded into thinking that authorizing overdose prevention centers is a single fix-all, but what we know, because we get to listen to the people who do this work and who care for our folks, is that it is a critical tool in that proverbial toolbox of how to keep our folks alive. Every person who will testify, certainly the proponents, and I imagine opponents as well, I won't speak for them, but supports access to treatment, to testing, to rehabilitation, to prevention. I said those in a different order. And this is part of that continuum. It's not either or. And if we hear from a person who does the work in Denver, she often reminds us that you have to be like the number one, I want to give this as a quiz, but there's one requirement to be prepared for treatment or for rehab. It's not citizenship status. It's not access to insurance. It's not being able to afford it. The one requirement is that you have to be alive. And authorizing local control of overdose prevention centers puts us in a position where we can do that. It doesn't mandate it for any place in the state, but my county and some others are ready to examine that. Appreciate the opportunity to be back with you, even given the circumstances, and especially on March 6th, as we think about those who are lost, and we hope we make better choices for the work ahead.
That was Colorado State Representative Elizabeth Epps testifying March 6th before the House Committee on Health and Human Services on House Bill 24-1028 on overdose prevention centers. Now for some of the public testimony. Let's start with Lisa Rayville, Director of the Harm Reduction Action Center in Denver, Colorado.
Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Lisa Rayville. I'm the Executive Director of the Harm Reduction Action Center, Colorado's largest public health agency that works specifically with people who inject drugs and people who smoke drugs such as crack, meth, and fentanyl. And the grief is overwhelming. We are losing too many people in this overdose crisis. We will never treatment or incarcerate our way out of an unregulated drug supply ever. I run the state's largest syringe and pipe access program where folks can get access to, you know, tools that they need, HIV hep C testing, fentanyl and xylazine testing strips, naloxone. People who use drugs are the true first responders in this overdose crisis. It's not legal for them to use on my property. Use and possession on the property can get the property seized. So they go a few blocks away to an alley or a business bathroom and they use there often alone. Not only are they using there, they're overdosing there. Not only the overdosing, they're the dying of overdoses in public places. It does not have to be like this. In a magical world, there'd be no drugs, but we live here. And there's something safer, more positive that folks can do today. And even if you don't care about people who use drugs, this is a larger community trauma issue. Last year in Denver, we lost 580 folks to a drug-related death. The year before that was 453, 472, 370. We are losing people, and then someone is finding them. This is a larger community trauma issue. As you can imagine, I get yelled at a lot about people publicly using drugs, but you can't use anywhere, right? So we can reduce public drug use. And if you'll notice, I have my binder up here. What we're talking about is happening in 17 countries, 150 sites in the last 40 years. No one's ever died of an overdose at one of these places because it's a trained professional there to recognize and respond. And the same cannot be said for Starbucks, outside of here, alleys, parks, other business bathrooms. Please support this today. I am begging you as a provider on the front lines. I absolutely need this today.
That was Lisa Rayville with the Harm Reduction Action Center in Denver, Colorado. Here's Tomas Hernandez, founder of Tribe Recovery Homes.
Hello, committee chair. My name is Tomas Hernandez. I'm the founder of Tribe Recovery Homes, and I've been a national advocate for about a decade. A lot of statistics and things have been said today. What concerns me is stigmatization through religion and data is always thrown at the addict in recovery. We're always thrown in groups of why we've done things and what we've done things for, and we're not holy enough to be on the streets, and we're not human, and we're fallible without a chance of making a comeback. I got over 10 years in recovery, and I remember a little red house that Lisa Rayville started that I was afraid to go into because I thought there was police in there. I thought there was police, and I finally went in, and somebody that was sitting inside there came up to me, helped me with my arms. I had abscess in my arms bigger than I could even. I couldn't even flex my arms. I couldn't even pull my arms and help me get Medicaid and get my medical attention that I needed. Still gave me my needles that I needed because she knew I was going to use them. But for years, that same establishment has been in this neighborhood. It has been a companion to people. Some people are not going to get sober, ladies and gentlemen. Some people are just not going to find recovery. No matter how much that you want to try, they're not going to find recovery, but they're going to still get sick. They're still going to hurt. They're still going to need some type of love and affection. And if we want to put on what laws are going to be broken, they're already breaking laws. And data and religious choice, it still shows us out in the cold, and it still shows that Colorado is not going to innovate and do something better. We need this site. What is it going to hurt to try? Thank you.
That was Tomas Hernandez, founder of Tribe Recovery Homes. Before him, you heard Lisa Rayville. They testified March 6th before the Colorado House Committee on Health and Human Services on House Bill 24-1028, which would allow municipalities in Colorado to authorize the establishment of overdose prevention sites, also known as safe consumption sites. HB 24-1028 was approved by the committee on a vote of 9-4 and has gone to the House floor for a second reading. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.